views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. Thank you, Scotty. welcome. Today is September the 17th, 2015, and it is a Thursday. We have a live show for you today. I was really enjoying listening to my man, Scotty. And thank you, Scotty, for all that you do. And listen, everyone, please continue to support and support Black Talk Radio Network. If you can at all, please support it. It's so important that we become contributors instead of just takers. This is a very important outlet that we have, because I know that many people such as yourselves, the ones that listen to Black Talk Radio Network, have been, you know, blessed and have really received much from the overall programming. So think about Black Talk Radio program and, you know, don't make a donation to keep it going. You know, it's so necessary, because this is the quickest way to lose something that's been beneficial to you, because there's not going to be any major mainstream, advertisers that are going to jump on and you're not going to get funded the way the actual media that is used against you is going to be funded at all, because the purpose of it is totally different. One is to control and one is to educate. One is to bring, you know, things to you, some truths to you, so that you can make a decision on how you want to live your life. The other controls your life. And that is what is going to have the lion's share of the financial support to keep going. Let me tell you something. As long as there is enslavement, you will have the mainstream media on, ready to go, on set, fully funded with all of the cameras and all of the productions that go along with it, because the reason why they're there is actually to keep you in a position of disadvantage, while Black Talk Radio Network is here to actually put you the way to, so that you can live the way God intended you to live, free and independent. So please continue to support. And if you haven't made a donation to Black Talk Radio Network, please do what you can so that it can continue to go on. And it's so important that we do that, because, you know, then it's funny how we take from things and don't really think about giving back to it. And I know that you do, but don't forget, it's something that is so necessary, because, you know, these times are very, very difficult, and it's a lot of work that goes into bringing you a show. So, and it's not here for your entertainment. It really, really isn't. It's here to, and it already has, brought, you know, conversation and have brought issues to you that can actually free you and save your life, and now get you to think different so that you would start asking questions. So continue to support, and if you haven't, please do. Also, go to Tando Radio Show on Facebook. It's our Facebook page that's there, and you can see some of the stories that we're going to be talking about. If you have a question or comment, you can leave it there. And while you're there, you know, give us a like, and then also spread the word about Tando Radio Show to your friends and family. That would greatly help the overall growth of the show. Okay, so today, Thursday, September the 17th, 2015, live show for you today. I wanted to kind of follow up on the show that we had yesterday. And today's show, it's a couple of things that I really want to make mention. When we come back out of, we're going to play another video. And I'm going to tell you, sometimes I like to do this because it gets you to think from someone else's point of view that maybe you have never been exposed to. And then really, really, what today's show is about is going to be about, of course, the part two from yesterday is our young people, our children. How do we best serve and protect them? And when you do that, when you move into a area of protecting them, you're going to go against what the norm and the status quo has always been. And the status quo is that send your children to school, send them to, you know, let them be educated by, or excuse me, schooled by the state, and then have that continuance, and then now their children, the children that they have will do the exact same that they did, same thing that they've done by being trained by the state. And then we wonder why nothing really changes, because we haven't garnished and protected some of the most important things that we have, and that's our intellectual property. We haven't made those our main assets, and we haven't moved in a different direction. I tell you, if you want to change a person's direction, if you want to change your direction, you have to just think different. You know, one of the things Albert Einstein said, in order to change a problem, you can't use the same consciousness that created the problem. You must think anew. And this is one of the things that we have to do with our overall inheritance in developing the nurturing of our young people, is that we have to take responsibility for that and to bring out the best in our young people, not by what the status quo in society has, because they're just going to teach them to maintain the paradigm in which enslaves us all. This is what has to change. We need to no longer give energy to the system. We need to dismantle it, and it needs to start with you and start with your children. The most precious thing as a human being, I believe, in the most responsible thing is when you are called into the responsibility of nurturing children into adolescence and into adulthood. So today's show, we have a video on why should, within our community, the Black community, why should we homeschool? And then when we come back, I need to talk about some events that have happened and what's on the agenda and what the schools plan on doing with your children in the event of a major disaster or anything that is deemed a threat to the overall structure of the society in which we live in, i.e. from a major event like what happened in New York or any other major event that could be happening in the future that I believe that they're going to bring it. Do you know what your public schools plan is? Well, we're going to talk about that and why you need to know. It is, when I say it is, it is the worst thing that I've ever heard. And this is something that we need to totally change. You need to change. And it goes along with the vaccinations. It goes along with the overall mentality that the state has when it comes in regards to your children. They believe that they have the authority and the right over your parental rights and your relationship and your blood relationship with your children that does not supersede the state's will. And this is what they're going to do. They don't consider your children your children. They consider your children their assets. We need to talk about what that means. So, hey, let's go to this video and pay attention closely, because this one sister is a very powerful in her presentation. So here we go. Let's go. Thank you.
about it. We started homeschooling during our enslavement, when, you know, there were compulsory ignorance laws. The first one was passed in 1740, where white people said that no black person could learn to read or write. And if they ever caught you doing that, then they could actually kill you, and they would. And if you were not killed, you were solely publicly and severely whipped. They did not want us to learn to read and write. But we did, nonetheless. Right?
Yes.
By the end of our enslavement period, 5% of the 4 million African Americans were actually literate. So clearly something had happened. Despite those compulsory ignorance laws, we had taken upon ourselves to educate ourselves. We had to hide, right? To do that, we did it at night. You know, we risked our lives for doing so, and we knew we were, but yet we did it. So it is not a new thing for us. And in many ways, if you think about it, our circumstances and our experiences in this country in particular have been so difficult, especially when it comes to education, that we have had to always organize ourselves. You know, what we're facing today in Philadelphia is not new. White people have never wanted us to be truly educated, right? One French colonist in the country I come from, in Guadeloupe, said, the more educated they are, the more dangerous they are. So keep them ignorant. Or if you don't keep them ignorant, then school them. Please, go ahead with my first slide. I want to suggest that there's a major distinction. I want to make that as a conceptual, you know, clarification. That's the distinction between education and schooling. Right? We have to be very careful about that. To be educated is not to be schooled, and to be schooled is not to be educated. And when we get in those European-controlled schools, is a lot of schooling and very little education. At least not the type of education where we need as African people. They school us, right? Because they want us to accept things as they are. They want us to accept the racial arrangement that benefits them. So they're going to teach us things that will make us believe and agree that, you know, they are indeed in charge and should be in charge. They will teach us things that will also lead us to accept capitalism as the best arrangement, social arrangement, even when capitalism is killing us. Right? So that's schooling. And we get a lot of that. And valuable education. And that's a big problem. So we have to be careful. And I want us to keep that in mind, because when we keep asking for more schools, do we really know what we're asking for? Are we fully aware of what we are asking for? And when we complain about schools closing down, why are we complaining? What are we complaining about exactly? About the fact we won't get brainwashed?
Right.
Is that what we're complaining about? Should we complain about that? You know? We have to think about this very carefully. Because going to school is not just going to learn your ABC like we think and learning to count, right? It's much more than that. And I'm going to talk about this. 1952, 1918, that's when you have really this period of time in the United States when schooling becomes mandatory. If you don't send your children to state-run schools, if you don't surrender as parents your authority over your children, your obligation to educate your children yourself, right? To really educate, and you don't surrender them to the state, then they can actually come and arrest you, and they can actually take your children away from you. And they did that. We have to ask ourselves, what was going on in the United States at that time? What was going on was industrialization, big factories, right, being set up, and the parents have to work as workers in the factories. So the children have to be occupied, And they themselves have to be prepared to become factory workers. And that's what it is. So you separate the children and the parents, you free up the parents to be good workers, and you prepare the children to take over their parents' job as good workers for the system. This is what it comes all about. Let's keep going, please.
Yes.
Again, another remark I want to make before getting into my topic is that schooling has been consistently used to oppress and control us as black people. We must understand that. We must be very clear about that. It's not been to our advantage necessarily to go to those schools that white people set up for us. And again, what I said, we can move on. You know, we always have difficulties and challenges. You know, there's no time you can look to and say, oh, this was the perfect moment in our educational experience. You know, everything was perfect for us black folks. There's no such point in history in this country, at least that I know of, that where things really were going well for us. Again, you know, it's easy to have this mythical, you know, point of reference, but it doesn't exist. You know, again, during enslavement, we couldn't learn to read and write. When, you know, Reconstruction, you know, we pushed hard for public schoolings. We got some of that, but then we had to fight over whether we get vocational training or liberal arts training. Remember, that was the debate between Booker T. Washington and Du Bois. Of course, the white people were pushing very hard for us to get vocational training. They felt we were not intelligent enough to handle, you know, anything abstract. Then after Reconstruction, of course, you know, we had Jim Crow, right, Plessy versus Ferguson, that said that we had to have separate facilities, and we know what happened. Our schools, if we can call that schools, you know, were terrible, right? Very much like what we have today, you know, overcrowded, dilapidated buildings. And also, white people made sure that there were no schools available for us. None. So you want to send your children to school? Yeah, but there are no schools. Because they're in charge, you know, of setting up schools, and they don't make any schools available for black people. So, and then, and of course, we have to fight. We have to enter 1954 when you have the Brown versus. Can you move on, please?
Yes.
Brown versus Board of Topeka, right, where we fight for school desegregation. That way, if there are our schools, then we can send our children there, and we think it's a big victory, and it is in a way, but at the same time, if you think about the price we have to pay for this, it was quite high. And of course, we know white people dragged their feet quite a bit. It took about another 10 years before school desegregation started becoming a reality, and that was with really the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Title VI, that said if you discriminated in any public space, then you would lose any, you know, funding. So that's really when schools started taking this seriously. I want to say in passing that, interestingly enough, we know that a lot of white people moved to the suburbs at that time because they didn't want their children in the cities, in the same school. And that's when also the white homeschooling movement started. And the white homeschooling movement started in large part because white folks were still simply saying, you know what, my little Johnny or Kathy or Emily is not going to go to school with black kids. And so it was a reaction. White folks don't tell you that. When you read about the reason why white people are homeschooling, they never mention that. Except in one article that was published in JBS, as a matter of fact. But they don't mention that, but yet you see it's very clear, right? I'm saying this also because we should not make the assumption that white people and black people homeschool for the same reasons. You know, that's the Eurocentric assumption that they make, that because they're homeschooling, then we're doing the same thing. We have different reasons because we have different experiences, right? Very different. So our current challenges, there are many of them. We have white teachers' racism. I listed as number one because, you know, a school could be quote-unquote bad, but sometimes you have a wonderful person in there with your child, and it really makes a difference. What happened as a result of Brown, 1954, is that thousands and thousands of black teachers were actually fired. and they were replaced by white teachers. Why were they fired? Why do you think they were fired, those black teachers? They didn't want black. The white people said, you know what, if we have to have racial integration in schools, our little white kids will not have black teachers. Because, you know, they think about the credentials, all of a sudden, you know, you're not qualified enough. We hear that all the time. You may have the same degrees that they do, but somehow your degree is less than theirs. So we find, that's for me, that was probably a major, major loss. You see, because before we may have had poor, quote unquote, schools, but if you have nurturing teachers who care, right, who really want you to do well, who believe in you, who do not question your intelligence, your humanity, then miracles can happen. But you find yourself in a state-of-the-art school, right, with a white teacher, white administrators who don't think of you even as human, it's going to be a big problem. And it is. We've seen it. Now, about 85% of all teachers in public schools and in private schools is even higher. 85% of white teachers in public schools are white. And 85% of those 85% are white females. So you see, already we're having a big problem. Because, of course, those teachers bring into the classroom, you know, all the stereotypes, all their racist attitudes. And the problem with white racism is that white people deny being racist most of the time. They say, no, not me. I am not racist. You know? And so it's very difficult to have an honest conversation and have them really maybe check in their racist biases, you see, because they are denying them. Not only that, but they also bring in the classroom, you know, the assumption that whiteness is the norm. They take it for granted. And so if you don't conform to their norm, right, their Eurocentric expectations, then something is wrong with you. And, you know, it's very subtle and sometimes not so subtle. But let me just give you a quick example of what I mean. My children are homeschooled, but I'm taking them to a drama class, which is just for homeschoolers. There are four kids, they're all black. The instructor himself is, I'm not sure who it is, but he's not white, he's kind of black, I'm not sure, you know, but he's not white, okay? Anyway, he came up with a play for the children, right? They're going to have a performance. And in the play, my beautiful daughter, my beautiful African princess, name is Lisa. And my beautiful African prince name is Michael. Now, my children have African names. So here, you understand what I'm saying? So the teacher, I'm sure, didn't mean any harm. But the fact of the matter is imposing this Eurocentric expectation that names have to be European. So I have to have a conversation with him on Tuesday. That, and I will suggest African names for my children. Right? I cannot have this. I'm saying a centered child, and you try to dislocate my child. But it happens all the time. And there's no necessarily, you know, there's no malice necessarily. That's all he knows. That's what he does. And mind you, this is not a white teacher. I'm not sure where it's coming from. I know he's not white. So you see, so your child gets that. And sometimes it's there's intent also. You know, there's deliberate. It's systematic. I expect you to, you know, be interested in the medieval knights. I expect you, you know, to want to go skiing, you know. You know what I'm saying. So we have also another issue that we've discussed here, the school-to-prison pipeline. That's a very serious issue. We had a program here maybe a month or so ago. But it's very real. We know that our children are set up to go straight, right, from school to prison. We had a recent case. Remember that little girl who did this chemical experiment and the thing blew up? I mean, big deal, right? It was a science experiment that, you know, they called the DA's office and they brought up charges against the girl. They said that she was trying to build a weapon with the intent to destroy property and maybe lives. And this girl is going to have a record. Now, if you have a, you know, I mean, it's just a science experiment. Nothing was destroyed. Nobody was hurt. But then you have this white boy who killed his little brother. and they say it was an accident, no charges. But the other boy is dead, no charges. And this is how they do our children every day all over the country. You hear stories about 5 years old, 6 years old being handcuffed. Remember the story you brought up, that girl had a tantrum?
Yeah.
Right, 6 year old? She has a record. So what do? You send your child to school, something goes wrong, and that girl who did the science experiment apparently was a stellar student. And she has a record. They really don't want us to do well. So they, you know, they decided that we're going to be really harsh on these children. Every little mistake they make, we're going to use against them. And our children have to live with that. Inferior academic standards. Again, I'm talking about it's going back to the white teachers' racism. You know, that somehow those kids are not really as intelligent, you know, so maybe we need to lower that. And here, of course, we have the special education referrals. That are very, very pervasive. In a state like Virginia, 51% of the students in special ed classes are black, while black students make up only 17% of the student population. 51%. We are clearly overrepresented. What happens when you're special ed, when they put that label on you? What happens to you? It's your educational grave. You're finished. Most likely, you will not graduate from high school. And if you manage to graduate, God knows how, you will not be able to go to college. What college will want a mentally retarded or special ed? You know, it means they will have to spend resources on helping you, because putting you special ed means that they've given you a watered down education. One supposedly adapted to your intellectual ability. And now, mind you, it is outrageous. It takes half an hour to put that label on you. They will bring you in, give you some tests to fill out, right? In 30 minutes, they will put that label on you for the rest of your life. They know exactly what they're doing. The black parents were aware of that. I'm mentioning all this to explain to you why homeschooling is really an option more and more for black parents. 30 minutes, two or three tests that the kids may or may not understand, and you have this MR label on for the rest of your life, and you're done. You're done. They know it. They know it. And that's why they're doing it. The inferior training is very clear. You know, I'm a college professor. I teach at Temple, and I can assure you that Temple students, that I guess, they manage somehow to graduate from high school. But when I look at their writing skills, it's not where they should be, really. And I see the writing skills of the white students, there's a big difference. It's not that the white students are smart or anything, but someone taught them how to write. Someone taught them how to write. And someone did not take the time to teach our black children to write. Their techniques, writing techniques. Run-on sentences, fragments of subject-verb agreement, all that stuff. It's very simple, but someone has to teach you. It's not like some type of innate knowledge of this, So it's clear to me, it's very clear to me that there are two, there are double standards here. Unqualified overcrowdedness, we hear about classrooms with 45, 50 students. I was at a school in Kansas City not too long ago. The social studies teacher, it was all black. She told me she had like 50 students. 50 students, 11th grade, 50 students. And some of the students had to stand up for the whole time because there are not enough chairs for everybody. So can you imagine having to stand up every day, every time, and every class you stand up? You know what? I think after a while I would stop going. I mean, really, how are you supposed to write anything standing up? And you get tired, you get bored, the stuff is not even relevant to you. They're not telling you anything about yourself anyway, So, if they don't take it more seriously enough to provide me with at least a chair on the desk, forget it. Why should I waste my time, But 50 students, And can you imagine how can the teacher even handle? This was a wonderful woman. She really meant well. How can she even handle 50 students, 50 teenagers, 11th graders? She could not. Can't even blame her. She can't. But that's, you know, 50 may be a bit much, but 35, 40, that's typical, yeah. Unqualified teachers, we know, so that's a fact that those white teachers who have very little experience, who are not qualified, what they call out of field teaching, you know, so you have a degree in art and then, but you will be made to teach math 12th grade. Can you imagine? Or you have a degree in English and you have to teach history. So that's very also frequent, you know, in black schools. And also teachers who keep, rotating, you know, so they spend 2 days here, 3 days there, so there's no continuity, you know, you have all those subs all the time. That's a real problem. Safety issues, the unavailability of schools, and the hostility, you know, you have to go in with your metal detectors, you know, and those schools look like prisons inside and outside. You have to get a pass just to go to the bathroom. You know, mentally, what it does to you as a child is simply terrible, right? So these are, in a nutshell, some of our challenges. And so, as you may imagine, homeschooling, again, just to give you the context for the growth in homeschooling, you know, for African-American people, generally speaking, in this country, you have about 2 million children are homeschooled, right? So there's been a rise in homeschooling. There are more children are homeschooled that are enrolled in charter schools. People talk about the charter school movement, but really there are more homeschooled children than there are schools in charter schools, children in charter schools. And it's growing fast. In the past 3 or 4 years, the increase was 74%. So that's the fastest growing, right, in terms of education option. Black homeschoolers, over 10% of those children are black, and black homeschoolers were the fastest growing group among homeschoolers, maybe because we have so many difficulties and challenges in those schools. And I'm going to talk about public schools, but I'm also going to talk about private schools as well, because, you know, we tend to focus on public schools and we list all the problems, but private schools are not much better for us. Homeschooling, I want to argue, is our latest strategy to deal with our current educational challenges, right? So we've, you know, throughout history, we have come up with strategies to protect ourselves, to educate ourselves in our best interest. And I'm arguing that homeschooling is one strategy, the latest one that we are employing to deal with our crisis. Not a crisis that we've created, but a crisis that is real. And again, remember, we've always been in crisis. So, go ahead, please. Now, what I want to share with you here, I decided to do this like that. I have been doing research on African-American reasons for homeschooling. Again, I make no claim of being objective or unbiased. I am very much for homeschooling. I've been homeschooling myself for 10 years. With my husband, we've been homeschooling our 3 children. We pulled our oldest son from school. He was 8 years old. And really, it was not a deliberate, you know, planned thing. You know, when he's 8, we were homeschooling. We were just so fed up with the school system that we said, you know what, we cannot subject ourselves to this anymore. And so we've got to do something. And we started looking around, looking for a good school. We could not find one because no school was good as far as we were concerned. Right? And so we said, you know, we'll try this. We were not sure how long, you know, we won't do it, but we've been doing it for 10 years, and he's 18 years old now, and he's on his way to college. So it can be done. And we're not the first. I mean, there are many, again, many hundreds of thousands of black people doing the same thing. What is more less common is people who homeschool all the way through the high school years. Many times people stop, you know, after 8th grade because they feel they may not be able to provide the education that their children need, so they may send them back to school. That's a typical scenario. But some people hang in there and just go all the way. Yes, you have a question?
Do you have resources for, that's my situation. I'm homeschooled, I have 3 children. My children have been homeschooled. My oldest is now a freshman in high school. He wanted to go to high school in his first year. And now he's out of public school. And now with everything that's going on, I do want to pull him out again. He's only been there for 1 year. But as an African American male high school student, I'm kind of at a loss as to where to go with him. It's been kindergarten through eighth grade was
pretty easy,
but high school is challenging. So.
You just keep doing the same thing.
Okay.
I mean, what is it, you know? Just keep doing the same thing. You just, you know, have to, of course, adjust to his, you know, intellectual needs, educational needs, but it's the same thing. We don't do anything different. And you know how you homeschool. I mean, this notion of first grade, second, all that becomes so blurred, you know. Yeah. So to continue with this, my husband and I went basically in different parts of the country, and we interviewed 74 African-American homeschooling families, and we asked them a simple question: why do you homeschool? Right? And so we have those interviews. Of course, we asked them a few more questions. You want to know how do you do it, and then how, not only why do you homeschool, but also what do you do as an alternative? You know, you're displeased with the schooling out there, public or private, and what do you do as an alternative? What's your understanding of educating your children, right? So we ask them that question. So what I want to do is share some of their statements with you so you can have a sense of how, you know, Black folks who are doing this feel. Mm-hmm. They give us several reasons. They say racism. In fact, racism was a part of every other reason. It wasn't really number one. They said quality of education. Mm-hmm. They were very concerned about that. They were concerned in particular about the fact that being educated in this country for a Black person meant that the Black person in question would not know anything about their history and their culture. For them, being educated meant knowing themselves, right? Cultural relevance, that goes, you know, hand in hand with that. What are our children learning? Why do they have to learn about, you know, the European kings and queens and not learn anything about African kings and queens, right? Why is there such a focus on Europe and at the expense of everybody else? They were displeased with that. They were concerned about racial socialization, meaning the ideas and the values that the Black children would internalize about themselves, about what it means to be Black. Mm-hmm. So basically, they were concerned about their children internalizing, you know, anti-Black racism, which is unfortunately often the case, right? I have one story in particular. It was a very sad one. A mother telling me her daughter was going to a private school, 6-year-old, and one day she wanted to pick up the daughter, and the daughter refused to hold her hand. And was adamant. She didn't want to hold the mother's hand. And the mother said, "Why don't you want to hold my hand, baby?" And she said, "Because you're Black." You know, this is what those schools do to our children. Let's face it. And it broke the mother's heart. She said, "So I'm paying $20,000 for you to hate me at the end of the day?" But that's exactly what we're doing. We're paying white people to make our children dislike us and not want to be close to us. But this is deep, you know. Again, we have to think about this. What does it mean? She was devastated. That was it. That was her daughter's last day of school. Because she had enough sense to understand, this is serious. I've got to cut this out. I've got to stop this right now, because otherwise my daughter and I will have a very serious problem. And this is my daughter, and I love her more than anything else, and I'm not willing to let that happen. But a lot of us are not vigilant. You see, so our children internalize that self-hatred. And then we don't know why, you know, my son only wants to date white girls. I don't understand what happened. He's only interested in light-skinned girls or white girls. Well, what do you expect? What do you expect? It is serious. They talk about family bonds. That goes hand in hand with that. What is a family? You know, this is a serious question issue in this country because family life is really destroyed. And teachers and administrators complain. They say, you know, that the parents don't do their share. They don't do their share. In fact, the there's a senator in, I forgot his name, in Tennessee. He said that, you know, the teachers and the schools have done their share and the parents have to do their share now. Yeah. And if they don't do it, you heard about it?
Yeah,
that exactly. He, if you don't show up for a PD conference, then your welfare check is going to be cut down. Because the parents, he said, are not doing their share. So we always hear that the parents, especially the black parents, are not doing their share. We're not involved. You know, we don't care about our child's education. I mean, Bill Cosby told us all about it, didn't he? Right? And that all we care about is buying, you know, expensive sneakers and this and that. But we don't care about how well our children do. You know, which again goes right into this white supremacist, you know, attitude, which is to blame the victim. Because you go to school, I'll let you speak in a second. You know, as a parent, you go to school, but you're being dissed. You know, I have parents telling me, you know, I would go with my husband to school, and the teachers would still insist that we could not be married. I'm right there with my husband, right? But they insist that we cannot be married. You know, so you think you want to go back? Yes.
I was going to say that at Kelly again, I'm having all kinds of dinner because I'm catching up with them. They have, the teachers have that exact idea that the children are difficult to teach because they come from bad families. And they have, we actually had some people who are coming and volunteering at the school to try to help because it's overcrowded and all these things. And all of the people who are volunteering are depressed. Like, actually want to talk to their, like, want to have group therapy for them because of what the environment is like in there. But they're also, many of them have become convinced that there are children in the school that can't be educated. And that there are children in the school that are coming from these bad families, and that's the reason why they can't be educated, and they are getting that message from the teachers at the school that they're
absolutely. It's a very serious problem. That's why I'm talking about those white teachers. Why it's so problematic, you see, to have those white teachers in such large numbers, supposedly educating our children, because they have all those assumptions about us, right? They don't live with us. They have no contact with us. They know nothing about us. But yet they are sure that they know us. I mean, that's white arrogance is typical. They know us, you know, more than we know ourselves. And they know what is good for us, of course. Because, again, you think about this Eurocentric assumptions. If you don't have this European patriarchal family structure, mother, father, and the two kids, right? Then there's something abnormal about you. But yet, you know, research shows that really what matters is not so much your family structure, it's the quality of the relationship within the family or among the family members. So let's say you have a mother who is deeply connected with her children. Those children will do well.
Yes.
But you can have mother, father, and children, and there's no connection there, the children will not thrive. They will not thrive emotionally, and they will not thrive educationally either. And that's what the research says. It's not a matter of whether you have father, mother, blah, blah, blah. It's not that. We know a lot of those white families are totally messed up.
I just wanted to say, actually, it's very basic. And leading to her question, I mean, unless you're doing some scientific type of job, you're really not even using all of the information that you actually learn from a higher level. You know, physics, chemistry, geometry. Like, we really aren't educating. Even when you get that information, you're really not analyzing the measurement of this room. Like, how many people came in here and used their geometry to tell you how many square feet, you know, how many tiles is in that ceiling, you know, like, you're not, so in terms of what you're saying, information is very, very basic, and unless you want to be a lawyer, or, you know, some things require what we call higher education, higher information, but in terms of her question, what are we doing with that student from grades 1 through 8? We got that, you know, that's kind of like that basic reading, writing, arithmetic kind of level. thinking, being able to have enough good common sense to relate to others. But now it's 9 to 12, and we need to know physics, chemistry, geometry. So is this parent going out to Temple or other universities, graduate students, and saying, because to me that's kind of putting them still too back in this racism, quality, because that, you also have to assess, well, is this intern or graduate student or person, any of those things?
I have to explain that to you. All some tutors are black. And his math teacher has been with him for 4 years. He's from Ethiopia. Physics teacher is from Morocco. I interviewed them. That was a criterion. I was not going to surrender my son to some racist white teacher. In fact, that was a shame on Penn. I went to Penn. I sent an email to the director, the chairperson of the physics department, who is a black man. I said, I'm very straightforward with that. I'm looking for a black. I was ready to settle for of color, you know, that's the primary black graduate student to teach my son. And he said, we don't have any black graduate student, and we don't have any student of color, graduate student of color. But we have some good graduate students. I said, no, thank you. I do not wish to place my son in the hands of anybody who will question his intelligence and will undermine him and make him believe that he cannot do physics like everybody else. It's not going to happen. So we have to be very cautious. But you know, in Philadelphia, there are a lot of black people who can teach. You know, who can teach. Also, when you get to the high school level, you can start taking community courses at community colleges. My son, that's how he got his chemistry. We signed him up for a chemistry course at a community college, and he got his chemistry like that. We had done quite a bit together, but you know, I got to a point where I couldn't take him any further, and we thought it would be a good experience for him to be in a college setting, and we sign him up. You know, so there are, and homeschool children do that a lot. You see a lot of them, they're 15, 16, and they're actually taking college courses because they tend to be more advanced.
Any manuals to, you know, get in touch with? I have grandchildren, but I don't know where I would start. Where would I start?
Where you would start is very easy. You would start by going on the school district of Philadelphia's website, because there are forms that must be filled out, right? If you want to do it in a legitimate way, which I would recommend that you do, but that is really not a big deal. They ask you to send an affidavit saying that you will educate that child, because remember, it's the law. Children have to be educated, but they don't have to be schooled. It's very easy. And then you have to submit a study plan, what you intend to do with that child for that year. And again, you can be very evasive, because they say, you know, you need to do science, you need to do English, you need to do history. So you say, I will do all of that. I'll do it. You may even put in parentheses what you will do. But again, they don't hold you to it because they pay no attention to it. So you know, you do that, and then
what they do, or is it more or less what you want to do?
Oh no, I do what I please. Okay. That's what I like about Pennsylvania, because it's very flexible. In New Jersey, if you live in New Jersey, you don't even have to report. New Jersey could not care less. They don't keep track of who is homeschooled, who goes to school. They total freedom, which may not be the best thing. Okay. At the end of the year, what you have to do is submit a portfolio, which basically samples of the work you've done with the child throughout the year. So a little bit of language arts, a little bit of, you know, history, a little bit, you know, whatever you did. Again, it's not a big deal. It really is not, right? You've done this? It's not a big deal.
Okay. Now I'm just wondering how to do it.
So it's, and you know, and you have to also have a log, you know, showing that you did 180 years of teaching.
Okay.
Look, you could bring one of your children to this lecture, and that would count as
a day. Okay.
They would be playing soccer, you know, in the park, and that would count as a physical education. You know, anything, you know, you may take them to see what is it, that film, 42, is that what they call it?
42.
Yeah, that would count as a history.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you know, that's the beauty of it. It's very flexible. So, excuse me, sometimes, you know, we go for, like, when we go away, because I like to travel with my children, so we go away like for 6 weeks. They don't do anything for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, in terms of academic work, but, you know, for them, the fact that they travel, you know, we may look where we're going on a map, check it out, you know, that's geography. We look for seashells on the beach, that's geology. I mean, you know, you stretch it, but you know what, in the end, your children, regardless, whether they go public or private, will learn, they learn much more. And standardized tests show it. We don't prepare our children for those standardized tests, but the fact of the matter, homeschool children outperform. And you know when they talk about that so-called gap between whites and blacks, and that disappears among homeschooling children, which shows very well that there's nothing wrong with our children. It's when they go to those schools that something happens to them, that their progress is actually hindered. Because once they are in school with parents who care, when they get a one-on-one instruction, they thrive. Yes. Yeah, unschooling is a form of homeschooling, right? It's a bit of a philosophy that came out of what was his name again? I forgot.
John Hall.
Yeah, John Hall's philosophy. Basically, children, teaching doesn't need to be structured, right? And that the whole world is a child's classroom, which is, you know, part of my approach. You know, I believe that you have to sit down with workbooks and do some structured work. But I also believe that traveling, going abroad, being in a different environment, seeing different things, meeting new people, you know, to me, that's part of also learning. So that will be if you wish. But some people do that all year around. Now, most people do a combination like I do. There's a great deal of flexibility. You know, we go on school trips, not school trips, on trips, I guess, educational trips, right? It could be a walk in the woods looking for fungi. You know, things like that, because, you know, they didn't need to see. It's not just looking at it in a book. It's out there. It has to be relevant, you know. What you learn should be relevant to your life. Otherwise, it becomes boring for children. Very boring. And most, I met a woman in Chicago. She told me her son did not learn to read until he was 13 years old. Mm-hmm. I found that a bit scary. Mm-hmm. But she was a strict unschooler. Never sat down with the boy to teach him any ABC, and she didn't worry about it. He picked it up, and she said when he started to read, he was an avid reader. Mm-hmm. Avid reader. Yeah, but I would be a bit nervous about that, you know. I can't do that. So I do a bit of unschooling, but you know, I personally I feel like okay, you know, you need to have those multiplication tables down. You need, you know. I mean, the heart of the reason to me would be you don't allow an enemy to teach your child. We are allowing people who have been socially oppressed to educate our children. This is ridiculous. Like that's foolish. It really is. Why are we doing this? I don't get it. Why would I allow an oppressor to teach my child who they are, who they're supposed to be? Why?
Well, one of the reasons would be a week or so ago, I woke up and I thought, I'm either bipolar, or severely mentally insane. Because you have to ask yourself, how do you participate in your own divine? That's a deep thing. So when I look at, you know, my life and look at, you know, it's like you either crazy, you know, like you have to deal with that. Because that's, you know, like we send our children, you know, to a process that is very self-destructive. And as a loving parent, why would you do that?
What would you do?
You know, that's a deep piece, and you have to really.
And you know, but we rationalize. I mean, like some of my friends said, well, you know, they have to learn about how to deal with white people and white racism. So the little boy is five. goes to an all-white school. He goes into the bathroom. Some white boy pulls his pants down. He's fine. How will he ever recover from that? 5 years old, the white boy pulls your pants down. In the name of learning to deal with racism, I'm going to put my 5-year-old son through this. No, thank you. I believe in protecting. What did I want to keep? You know, they will have to deal with it, but I think the later, the better. Because when they're so young, they're so vulnerable, they're so open and trusting, then I don't know why. Why are you doing this to me? And it's an accumulation of experiences like that, where you've been marginalized, you've been suppressed, you've been ridiculed. And it accumulates in your soul. And the weight is so heavy that you cannot live up to your full potential. You're trying to survive. Imagine the waste of ourselves just dealing with this racist mean-spiritedness and those assaults day in and day out. And schools are a major site, you know, of racial oppression. Because our children are there by themselves. We're not there to protect them. We don't even know what's going on. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the other thing that happens too that I've noticed now is that, like you say, you can't even protect them. You don't know what's going on.
No.
And the schools themselves have made it more difficult for parents to actually be on site to check on that. Because I remember there was a time when they used to invite you to come and participate, sit in your class so you can see what was going on with your child. But now, and I guess a lot of it has to do with stuff that's going on for the sake of security or whatever, that's the hardest thing in the world now to get into your classroom and see your child.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. I remember my little one went to an Afrocentric school, a charter school in Mount Airy. And, you know, kindergarten, he was in kindergarten, and the principal said that the parents were not welcome. He said, "Now, your children are between our hands, and you're going to leave them, and we're going to take care of them." And I'm saying, "No, it's not going to work. I don't know you.
Right.
Why should I trust you with my child? I don't know you. And the fact that you would ask me to do that means that really I should not trust you. What are you going to do with my child? I cannot witness."
And that happened.
The isolation and alienation again, you know, speaks to that. She's talking about her son, Shanika, in New York. She said, you know, he often felt angry because there was a lot of stereotyping. You know, a black male. Can you imagine the only black male in the class? So we don't get all that. And I don't think you feel comfortable in that environment again, so I can't, and I'm not going to do that to me yet.
This point right here speaks to sort of my experience. When I was in elementary school, there was a point where the series Roots came out. I was the only black male in my class, and one of the students called me a dumb nigga. And I got up and I walked across the room and I immediately started punching the child at that age. You know, we're 11, 12 years old. It just happened. But since at that point, there was nothing done to him, but I was removed from that class every Wednesday or something, where I had to sit with the school psychologist for a couple of years, for a couple of hours during every Wednesday. And this school psychologist would ask me questions because I grew up in a single parent household, would ask me questions about where is your father, do you miss your father, and things like that. So it was this brainwashing process that was taking place.
How could you? And the thing is that you became the problem for defending yourself,
right?
Not the white boy's racism. That was not interrogated. He didn't have to see what his psychologist did, what was wrong with him for being so racist. Another one is the dissatisfaction, you know, with the lack of black history, real, meaningful black history, you know? My daughter was telling me about her friends who go to that little white school, and she said, you know, but so-and-so told me that they learned about Egypt last year. I said, yeah, but what did they learn? Egyptians were white. That's what they learned. That's what they learned. You look at the textbooks, you know, that's what Egyptians are. Yes, of course, they said, of course they will teach you about Egypt, but they will claim it.
Yeah.
So I like this quote too, because I think it really captures something. Slavery did not begin black history, but that's what you get. Right? Black history, African history starts in 1619. slavery, right? Yes. And if you are educated in American school, private, public, that's what you're going to, you're led to believe. You learn that, you know, there was this place in Africa called Timbuktu. Mm-hmm. Now, there were slaves, and the slaves were treated poorly, and then came Abraham Lincoln, and then came Martin Luther King, and then there was the other guy called Malcolm X, and then, you know, now there's Barack Obama. And that's black history, you know? And you might get in there once in a while, oh yeah, there was this woman called Harriet Tubman, and you know, a black man inventing the traffic light, that is if you're really lucky. You know, that's what our children get. Also with slavery. Right, so, you know, children, you know, little, you descendants of slaves, don't ask them to give you any name of any people in Africa, don't ask the teachers either. That's something I work with teachers, and believe me, the ignorance about Africa is tremendous. They don't learn, you know, don't get anything as part of their training when they go to their school of education program. So what can they teach our children? You know, they can't, and we shouldn't expect them to. They have no interest, they know nothing themselves, and they really believe it's not important. You know, you have African-centric schools that try to do better than that, and they do. But the problem is that when, you know, you work, especially charter schools, you work within the system, and you will have to follow their curriculum. So you just want to try to get in a few things here and there if you yourself feel that it's important. Because I remember that third grade teacher or second grade teacher my son had at that school, you know, she first day, you know, she called the parents in and told us our kids were going to learn 30 new vocabulary words every week, and then, you know, we're supposed to be so impressed. And finally, I raised my hand and I said, what about Africa?
Thank you.
What are they going to learn about Africa? Oh. Well, if it's important to you, as it's an African-centric school, I will talk about Africa. Yeah, but how will you talk about Africa? And surely enough, my son came home one day and said, Africans live in huts. And I was so appalled. That was so appalled. I said, you know, I'm done. I'm through with it. You know, this is it. I'm made for this. No, I can do better than that. I mean, I know I can do better than that. You know what I mean? I can do better than that. And I would not have this. Nonsense. You know, same thing. He came, the opposite of man is woman. I said, no, that's the European mindset. How is the opposite of man be woman? No. We compliment each other. That's the African way. No, I had to go talk to the teacher. There had to be a lot of talking with those teachers. This was to be an African-centric school. So can you imagine what it would be like in a regular school? You know, but if they're not trained properly, that's what they do. And again, they have good intentions. I'm not, you know, attacking anybody personally, but that's what we get. Yes.
Well, on that part, charter schools, you have to hire, being that you're accepting money from the government, you have to hire teachers that have credentials. So where back before back in the day when we had our independent black institutions, we had folks who grew up in the struggle and was educated through the struggle, you know, of black people teaching our kids, and they was teaching history and, you know, so forth and so on. But they may not have gone all the way and got their credentials.
Yeah.
So, you know, so those teachers, when they got the charter for their school in order to keep their school afloat, you know, they had to fire those teachers and bring in new.
Yes.
You know, so that's one problem that we have.
And sometimes you have white teachers teaching at so-called Afrocentric schools.
Right.
And
that's throughout.
That's a big problem.
Right.
Yes.
And the other thing,
If I can keep going with this, so we can wrap this up. Here's a mother who shared a story with me. My daughter was probably in like her fourth day of school, kindergarten, right? The fourth day, huh? The teacher started talking to the mother and said, your daughter can do this, she can do that, she can't do anything else. And I was like, excuse me, she's five, she's never been to school before in her life, what do you mean? She can do this, she can do that. So what is she supposed to be, do, be magic? Is she supposed to come to school already knowing any everything? And from then on, the teacher started calling her the caboose in the classroom. And she was the only black child. Yes, I mean, I'm telling you, the stories we heard, right? So the mother had no choice but to pull her daughter out of school. Can you imagine that to yourself, Tim? You're being ridiculed. You will never raise your hand. And if the teacher calls on you, you will probably act dumb, like you don't even want to speak. And then they will wonder what's wrong with you, and then they put that MR label on you. You know, she needs to go to special education because they destroyed you to begin with. You don't even have a chance. But we've heard many stories like that. Go ahead. And the criminalization of our children, that's also very real. This woman said, that's Leila in New York. I got so disrespected in my face, and I just felt my boys were treated like criminals. They would say, your son is being aggressive. He was second grade, and he had to fight over blocks. That's all. I mean, I was getting called, and this was a private school. I got called at work all the time. They said he's really aggressive. We were really worried about him. And he was turning into a terror, and he was in such a terror himself. And she said, the last sentence is really very disturbing. She said, we were at war. Me and my son were at war. So it was destroying their family from within. Because, of course, you know, you want a white man's son acting like that. And when you get home, you know, you get on your child's case. But the child is so young, he can't even articulate. You know? So it's terrible. You know, she was talking about how really almost destroyed her family. Between her husband and her, there was tension, the children, you know, and it was just terrible. Now this mother talks about, if you can see, how her daughter said, I don't want to go to school, right? Well, white girl, this is in Ireland, the daughter would never want to go to school, always claiming that she had a stomachache when it was time to go to school, right? So the mother thought she was making it up, that she took her to the doctor. The doctor said, no, she's not making it up. That's how she's expressing that she's stressed out. She has an anxiety problem. She doesn't want to go to school. So the mother started going. And she said, I started going up to the school, and they treated those kids like animals. That's what she said. All the black kids were treated like animals. And the day that I was there, I remember they were all punished. The third graders, and I could not even remember why they were punished. It was not clear to me. So no recess. Can you imagine? No recess. Everybody's punished. Everybody's punished. And every day, no recess, you know, because you're acting up, we're going to punish you. But the kids don't even know what they did wrong. Regardless of what they do, they're going to be punished anyway. Labeling, you know, again, that we were talking about the MR. This is again a 5-year-old in Virginia. First week or second week of class, the teacher approaches the mother and says, you know, I think your child has a problem. And I think he needs to be tested for special ed. The mother objects to it. She said, no, there's nothing wrong with him. They said, yes, we believe there's a problem. And, you know, she really objects to it, and eventually, they tested him, and surely enough, they said he was mentally retarded.
Oh, God.
And I saw, when I interviewed the mother here in Philadelphia, she had moved from Virginia. When I interviewed her, I saw the young man. He was just a normal child. And she was homeschooling him. But it was too late because they had the time to put an MR thing on him. You know, which now this is a label. You know, she would have to hire a lawyer. It's a long, extensive, and expensive process and she would have to get him tested to prove that her son is not mentally retarded. Now, just imagine what it does to you psychologically, growing up with this label, mentally retarded. You know?
Yes.
It's certainly not empowering. It's not giving you self-confidence. Insulting and offensive teachers, we got a lot of that. As quiet as it is kept, our children are being insulted on a daily basis. On a daily basis. We're not aware of it because we're not there with them. Here, I was amazed by this one. This woman was telling me, she, mother of three in Washington, D.C., she was telling me about a friend of hers who sent her son paying like $30,000 a year in D.C., expensive school. He, so the friend's son, is in a private school, and one day the English teacher told the class, there was some picture of an ape, and the teacher said to the class, oh, isn't he so cute, just like such and such, and she pointed out the only two black boys in class.
Wow.
Yeah, that's very real. You know, so again, how are you supposed to feel, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead, please. Another one here, right in Philadelphia. I talked about this English teacher asking her 10th graders to write an essay, and the prompt was a fat black woman eating chicken on the bus.
Oh, wow. Ooh.
Now, again, parents are paying $26,000 for that. And, you know, everybody fell out laughing. Teacher, his white students, they thought that was hilarious. I mean, they couldn't wait to start working on their essay. They couldn't wait to start making fun of black people. They couldn't wait. You see? And they won't be rewarded for engaging in racist activity. The parents had had enough. They pulled the daughter out. I think the next day that was finished. Yeah, but you know what? That's the same girl who has psychotic problems now. She'll kill herself after 3 years of that. So they pull her out too late, really. Huh? Right here in the neighborhood, I won't name it because other parts will put that on YouTube, but it's right there. Go ahead. Another one, the same school. You wouldn't believe this. Quaker school, right? Supposedly white liberals, progressives, whatever. You're right. Kindergarten boy, black boy, the only black boy again, Black History Month. He comes to school and he sees that, you know, that sign, you know, no blacks allowed. And the teacher acted like she didn't know what was going on. She had not seen the signs and it was not a problem. It was just an illustration of civil rights movement and blah, 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 you know, all kinds of nonsense. But, you know, again, what does it do to you? The message is right clear. You are not welcome. They take your money, all right. So the compounded effect of school abuses, because that's what it is, you know, again, can be very severe. And I like this Kwaku, again, in Philadelphia, he said this. So there are a lot of things that happen over time when you take a child that is remarkable, right? We hear those stories of children who start out, you know, bright, with a lot of promise and potential, and you punish them, put them in time out, make them feel bad about themselves, and honestly, just do things that are mean to children. But it happens every day, and parents have no clue. They are so busy, and they're just happy that their school, that their child is going to a good school, but how do you define a good school? People will tell you, it's a good school, that's it. I guess if your child is not in detention, or they're not getting arrested, then things are going well. Right? No, I mean, no, he doesn't have a record, he's okay, he's not being suspended, no, everything is okay, but things are not okay. They're not okay at all. So, again, here, and I will wrap this up, talk about homeschooling as racial protectionism. You know, we see that really, that's the main reason parents give. They say, you know, we wanted to protect our children from all these school related racism. And one criticism or remark or comment that was made often enough was that really school integration, racial integration was not a good thing for black folks. That we were very pleased with the 1954 Brown decision, but if you look back, maybe we were better off, you know, with our black schools, our black teachers, black administrators. Maybe. Right? You look like you care about you. At least, you know, we don't have to go through the monkey thing and all that stuff and the no blacks allowed. You know, hating or wanting to be white, hating your mother because she looks black. You don't have to go through all of this. Yes. What I like is this one. I guarantee you, if a lot of those young men were homeschooled, they wouldn't be in jail today.
Okay.
I like to believe that too. Right? That if they were homeschooled, they wouldn't be in jail. All those young black men, if they had stayed home, they would not be in jail today. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, I missed the lecture, but did you cover the
like a synopsis, like if somebody wanted to homeschool.
We're going to get to this in a minute, and I had to go ahead. But we talked about it a little bit already. Go ahead. And some people simply have lost faith in schooling altogether. I have to admit, I'm one of those people. I really don't think the system can really be fixed or whatever. You know, I really don't believe that. You know, I would like to tell you, yes, we can do this and a new reform and this and that, but I don't believe in schooling. And I really like this. It's a model to New York. I think we need to stop hoping for them to do it for us. They're not going to do it for us. They're not going to do it, you know what I mean? Like in 4-hour schools, and I don't even believe in school anymore. That's what she said. When you do the research about schooling, I think homeschooling is really the answer. I mean, everyone is trying to get a scholarship and get this and get the internship, and I'm like, no, man, we can really do it. We can really fix this. And I think the most radical thing I can do in my life is homeschool my black children. I think it's really the answer. No, not, oh, we need better standards, we need better testing. I feel that homeschooling is the best opportunity for us. She's very clear. You know, she said, my children are not going back to that thing called school. Under no circumstances, it's not going to happen.
Okay.
And again, another woman, I like that. I see America does not love my children.
Okay.
You know, it's obvious America does not love my children. They have a plan for my children. I'm sure you know the statistics for prisons. That is the plan for my children, and I'm not going along with it.
Yeah.
They're very clear. It's a resistance. I'm not going along the plan. The plan is to lock up my children as running men to the school system. Before you know it, they get arrested for some trivial reason. They have this record on and they're finished. And she said, this is not going to happen to my children. I'm not, I like that. I'm not going along with the plan. I'm not. And then I like this one too. A mother in Chicago, she said homeschooling is brings relief. Basically, that's how she describes it. You know, what has homeschooling brought to you? Homeschooling is very positive, you know, it's liberating, you know. I just feel that we are who we've been waiting for, you know. You know, no longer do I have to feel like I have to wait by the phone because school is going to call me. It was so much pressure. No longer do I have to pick my son up and hear him say, Mom, am I a bastard? That's what I learned in school today. And he was 5. So no longer do I have to listen to a white teacher who is in her 20s, who has not lived long enough, doesn't have children, never went to the daycare center, tell me she thinks she knows my child, you know, and that he has ADD and he has all A's. No longer do I have to subject myself to the ignorance and the racism of the American education system, which does not teach our children and we cannot expect it to. You know, black parents of homeschooling are very clear. Very clear about why they're doing this and why they will keep doing it and why in their minds more black people should do this, really should seriously consider doing this. So what do? I want to get to this real quick. They use homeschooling as a racial building strategy. They want their children to have self-knowledge. They want them to know their true history. They want them to know about Kemet, about Africa, West Africa. They know Stalin 1619, you know. I let them know that black history is not just in February and it started before we got in America. Right? Some people talk about trying to get their children to Africa, to Kemet, you know, if they can. They're very adamant about that.
Right.
Self-knowledge again. She's an African child, so she should know where she comes from, just like I would think a Chinese girl should know about the history of China. I feel she's an African child, and although we don't live in Africa, we live in America, she should know her history and her culture and be proud. And I feel like it gives us a sense of self-esteem and self-respect to know your lineage and every aspect of it. This woman is very interesting. She's a single mother, right? And she would work at night. So she could be with her child during the daytime. You know? The sacrifices that we make, that's what I'm saying. When people say we don't see the value of education, we do. I really beg to differ with that statement. We do, you know? And this is what she's willing to do. She has very little money, but she's adamant that she will educate her child and give her child a knowledge of self that she needs to have to be the person that she needs to be in this world. very clear. They're very heroic stories. We don't need to think that homeschooling parents are people with money. Mm-hmm. That is not the case. Or they have to be there to be two parents. That's not the case. In her case, it was very interesting. And sometimes she would have to take her daughter to work with her. Mm-hmm. And she would do that. But in the daytime, she would be home with her child to educate that child. Self-esteem and self-respect are also part of the strategy. I want him to know that, you know, black people did just as much, if not more. Black people actually built this country. Black people invented and discovered and explored just like everyone else. One of the things I very much want to do with my son is to travel. I believe that travel is very important. Right? So again, that's the plan. That's what she wants for a child. Go ahead. I like this one. I make a point of teaching African American history to my children. That's the foundation. But I don't teach them, oh, we were slaves. I teach them in a sense, look at where we've come from and look at where we are now. There's something in us that is no other people. We have strength that doesn't exist everywhere because of what we've come through. So, yes, we're going to talk about slavery, but as a heroic moment, we've managed to overcome this. We've managed to come out of this. That would be the emphasis, as opposed to, you know, we slave for white people, we serve them, and we liked it, it wasn't so bad. And then I like this, this is my last one. People tend to marginalize black kids and have a lower expectation, and, you know, stereotypes. And at this point, my children, listen to this, this is a very powerful statement, my children don't have any idea of stereotypes. They don't have any idea of an inferior expectation for them. They just don't know this concept. They just don't have it because they were never placed in a situation where anybody, you know, pushed that notion that as black people they are inferior. You know, so can you imagine how what black children who have that sense, strong sense of self can actually do? You know, it's very powerful. Yes. Now, I want to talk about the advantages quickly. Obviously, if you homeschool your child will be protected, you know, by not being placed in, you know, in a physical, you know, location of the school. The socialization of children, you can teach yourself, you know, your children about, you know, what it means to be African, African-American, black, whatever, whichever way you decide to identify yourself. Of course, the family bonds are very strong. This is something that homeschoolers, generally speaking, report as a very, very, you know, a closeness. Between parents and children. Because we spend a lot of time together. Yeah. It's not magic, you know. We spend a lot of time together. Sometimes more time than we would like to. that's the deal, right? Yeah. We're going to be home together all day long, 7 days a week. High academic standards because, you know, it's a one-on-one instruction. Mm-hmm. Which means that if your child can go faster, right? Mm-hmm. Then you move along. That's why a lot of times those homeschool children, it's not that the homeschool children are more intelligent, but it's because the instruction is such that you can keep going. Right? Like my little one, he's 8, he's doing a division. He probably would have to wait for another 2 years. I don't know to do this. I don't know when they do that in school. I have no idea. You know, but we just keep going. You know, we keep going until he cannot handle it, but if he can do it, and that's what most homeschoolers do. And that's why, you know, you read on the 11th grade level, because, you know, you can read, just keep going. Yeah. School actually holds you back. You know, if you're an average child, I guess that's okay, but if you are a little brighter than average, it's going to be a very big problem for you because you will become average. The system will force you to become average. Go back, please. And, you know, the constant contact with, where are you? Go back.
Go back.
Go back, please. And you have high expectations because it's your child. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not settling for low, crappy stuff. You're going to redo it until you can be proud of your work and I can be proud of your work too. So, you know, whatever time it takes, we will spend it on that. You know, and also we don't move on until you've mastered. And mastery is not just a test. I really have to say, you really mastered that thing. You can talk about this thing. You know, so of course it makes for quality education. You know, and most people remember they homeschool because they care. So go ahead. Now, there are some challenges people who don't know anything about homeschooling will criticize you, ask you, you know, why are you doing this? You think you're so good, right? Or they may ask you, you know, all the sacrifices, the struggle, you know, it took for us to get, you know, those public schools. How come you're living without the struggle, blah, blah, blah. Not, you know, facing the reality. Finding the right homeschool curriculum, sometimes you see the question you ask, you know, what do I do with my now high schooler, right? That's the question we ask, you know, what do I teach, right? How do I teach this? So that's the question, the thing that we have to go through. You also have to be very dedicated. You know, sometimes people really, they can do it, you know. Few people, but it happens. They get burnt out, you know, they feel overwhelmed. They also feel like not being a teacher, they're not equipped, right? So they are a bit intimidated by this whole idea. And then if you have the critics in your family questioning you doing this, you know, that doesn't help. And then the constant contact with your children, you have very little private time. I mean, seriously, that you know, let's be real, you know, there's very little private time. Mm-hmm. Where you can say, you know, I have this little time for myself to do this, even just go to the gym. I mean, very few gym has a childcare, you know, arrangement, but it's going to be hard, you know. So I know that, you know, some homeschool parents feel like, you know, this is too much, but I will end with this, and this is a statement by several African-American homeschooling parents that we interviewed. They said, I wish more black people homeschool their children because it is simply awesome. Especially if your child has gone to school and you pull them out and you really see the difference. You really see the difference and you appreciate, you know. It's not easy, but it's not as difficult as people think it is.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For live programming schedules, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All right, everyone, welcome back to Tando Radio Show. That was a long video, but it was so needed because our children are the most important thing and most important obligation and responsibility that we have. And I posted the video on inside of Tando, and I thought it was just a marvelous, marvelous video. And I hope you enjoyed it because there was a lot to learn. So, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032. You know, one of the things that I wanted to highlight what the sister said was that public school will hold you back. And that is the overall design and the objective of that school. It's not only just to hold back the genius. It's not only just to hold back, because all of our children are geniuses. The thing is that you just have to find and you just have to let their genius shine. All of them are. And the system is meant to hold them back. And let me tell you why it's meant to hold them back. There was something that Warren Buffett said not too long ago. It was it was earlier this month, okay? I think it was earlier this month, around the 9th or the 10th, okay? This is what he said. Listen closely. Tells you everything. You want everybody to be educated to their potential. You want people to reach their potential. That still won't work for some people in a highly developed market. I mean, if there were a sports-based system, you could give me a PhD in football and I couldn't practice 8 hours a day. And I could practice 8 hours a day. And I might be able to carry the water from, not onto the field, but from the locker room to the bench. There's just some people that don't fit in a well. That there's just some people that don't fit well into a highly skilled marketplace economy. They're perfectly decent citizens. We'll just send them off to Afghanistan, but they're not going to command a big price. That's the schooling system. That's the whole schooling system. From the very beginning, they're not there. The system is not there to bring out the best in you. It's only there to use the best that you have and to place you in what serves them. And if their system of profitability has been laid in enslaving people, what do you think that they're going to teach in the schools? How to be the perfect slave. This is the real agenda. This is what we need to protect our children from. This is what we need to protect ourselves from. You know, one of the things is that, you know, when we were listening to the video and we're talking about, there was one part of the video, and they were talking about what they would teach them in school, and people laugh, you know. But see, some things are no laughing matter at all. I understood, but I don't accept. Because this is, sometimes we laugh too much and stare too little. We don't stare at where we need to go and start to move in that direction. We may laugh at all. I understand that, you know, everyone there was laughing at, wow, this is messed up, and they took it. But see, that's the system also. That is also the system where we laugh off things. Instead of being completely committed, and I know that those people there are committed because they wouldn't have been there, but it's also some of the psychological effects and reactions to what's being done to where we will laugh it off. And believe me, it has an adverse effect at some time because they've actually trained us in so many ways to laugh everything off. Everything off, we laugh. And at some point in some time, the joke has to stop being told to an audience that will respond to it because it's not a laughing matter at all. So, this was a great video as to why you need to homeschool our children. We need to actually get back to, I would even say that we need to separate ourselves from the system of enslavement. This is a video I think you need to hear over and over again. Go back because it was so much. It's a long video, but it was just so much. So much to absorb, so much to really think about, and so much to be committed to, because that's really where we are. And I know for you, we need to look for a better way. We need to disassemble and to disconnect ourselves from the system and reconnect ourselves to one that benefits us, that benefits us all. Collectively, there needs to be a collective prudence that we need to have. We need to reestablish our own schools and to have the institutions of higher learning not to, for us not to send off our children and our students to institutions of higher learning. We need to establish the institutions of higher learning because that's who we always ever been. We need to reclaim our ancestral birthright as being the ones that navigated, being the ones that build, being the ones that solved, being ones that created better and created a sustainable living in the most harshest conditions. You know, one of the great things about Gaddafi was one of the great wonders of the world was the aqueduct that he built. They brought bringing water to the barren deserts of Libya because it speaks to the phenomenal mind and ability that we have that has been suffocated here in this country. The system has been that way because the system was built off of enslaving people. And since it's been built off of enslaving people, there is no other way that that country could ever operate in because of the profits that it gained from it. One of the great things that happens at these so-called public schools is they try to nationalize you. They'll nationalize you to get you to compromise who you are and tell you that you need to have a blind, unadulterated faith in this so-called system. And this is where they get the military worship, the worship of the flag, the worship of idol things. This is all done in school. Because they have a purpose. They have a purpose to maintain the corporate structure. And that corporate structure is embedded in enslavement. And they tell you it's for the good of your children and the good of you. You know, and then one of the first things that these schools try to teach you to do is to work for a company, to work for a corporation, to work for the system in one way or another. And, you know, I know that my man, Brother Braggs had said that he went to Catholic school and I went to parochial school also, Catholic school also. And it really opened my eyes as to how the system was meant to manipulate and deceive us all, and to deceive and maintain a pool of talent that the agenda could always take from by way of the prison industrial complex, by way of the poverty level, maintaining a level of poverty. Most of us don't even realize that that's what the school systems really uphold. They uphold a system of impoverishment and the separation so that there is no real form of equality. It's a facade of equality, but there's really a disparity of treatment. Disparity of treatment in resources, disparity of treatment of curriculum, this disparity of care and development and nurturing of our students. And guess what? They even do that still in so-called black schools that happen to be public black schools, where all the administrators may happen to be, but they still follow the same curriculum of destruction. And this is extremely, extremely dangerous. And this is why we continue to have to deal with the same things that we've dealt with so far in the past. So it comes a time in life where you need to do, as Albert Einstein said, in order to change, in order to correct a problem, you can't use the same consciousness that created the problem. At some point, we need to have a different consciousness so that we can have a different result. There is no voting that you can do that's going to change this. You voted from here to kingdom come. You voted from here to the outer edges of this universe. And nothing has changed because voting doesn't matter. The only vote that matters is the one that you decide to change and re-energize and go in a different direction. And why not start with our children? The curriculum can be established by you. The ability to develop our children can be established by you. Will it be difficult? Yes. Extremely in some points, but it will get easier as you move along. Because other things in life, once you start something, whatever your fears were, you find out something that your fear has always been a facade, because the fear is the institutional method of keeping you in place, stagnant, hamstrung, cemented, bonded, unable to move, and paralyzed. So once you get past that, then you realize in all phases of life, that you were far greater than what you even thought of yourself. And this is what has to be passed on to our children. And it's not something that we really can compromise with any longer. Because of the vaccinations that they want to give the children, because of the agenda that they have for the children, because of the continuous paradigms of war that they have, they want to continue to send off the youth to fight their battles. And what is their battle? The fight to control and to maintain the status quo of enslavement. That's what the real war is about. And I believe it's time that we use a different consciousness. And who better to do it than you? Than you. There's a global awakening that's happening. And that global awakening is dangerous to the system. We need to continue past just waking up. We need to move into executing and doing something totally different. They try to tell you that that's a utopia that doesn't exist. I'm here to tell you that that's a lie. Like everything else that we've been taught in schools and everything else that we've been told in the past, it's all a lie. And that at some point, the real history and real math and real science have to be taught to our children. And it is a great way for us to reignite our ancestral ties to Africa, because there are great mathematicians and there are great scientists that come out of Africa that are just waiting to help you with the institution of learning the great arts, the arts of science, the arts of math. They're waiting on you. When I say you, I'm talking about the people that live here. You, every person listening, they're waiting for you to contact and to ask for assistance, and that will open the floodgates of opportunity for our young people. We can develop a different form of living that no person could take away. Because it's a powerful thing. Once you come in a realization of who you really are and what you're really capable of, there isn't any bully that can stand before you that renders or strikes any form of fear or trepidation in you. It just doesn't happen. At some point, we need to stop being the social cowards that we've been taught to be. Understand that has happened, but that doesn't have to be what we accept. So this was a great, great video. If you'd like to get in on a conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 641-715-3660. Participant code is 549032. Now, one of the things I want to talk to you about is that there was an operation that has happened throughout the country. And one of the things I want to talk to you about is an operation called Operation Mountain Guard. And Operation Mountain Guard, and it happened in different parts of the country, okay? This is something that you really need to pay attention to. This is extremely important. In Operation Mountain Guard, there was supposed to be, they simulated a terrorist act or a natural disaster. And what they did and what the schools did was this. The schools took, and this happened in Denver, the schools took on an unannounced, without telling the parents, without informing them, without having a waiver signed or informing the parents what the intentions was, they had a drill. And this drill required them, if they needed to take all of the students away from the school for whatever reason, something happened at school. And you know, from a natural disaster to you name it, a terrorist act or a active shooter somewhere else, and the school was going to take the children away from the school. They put them all on the bus. They took them to a stadium and then told the parents that they needed to come to the school, to the stadium to pick their children up. The parents had no clue this was happening. Let me tell you what these schools have done now. They've taken their parental rights that you think that you have is no longer acknowledged at the public school. Just think of the vaccination. They've already told you that you don't have a choice. So what parental right did you thought you had no longer exists with them. And then the instance where they took these children from these schools and told the parents that they needed to come to this particular spot to pick up their children. What is that doing? They're conditioning the parents to realize that the state is God and is not to be challenged by anyone, not even for your children. So just imagine something happens. In Southern California, you have a major earthquake. They're going to put your children on the bus and take them somewhere, and they're not even going to tell you where they're going. What is the agenda behind that? It's the same agenda that there is to that force vaccinate them, because that's what they're doing. And let me tell you what they're going to be doing next in school. They're going to be giving the vaccinations at school. This is the slow process to further enslave you and to get you to never to challenge the system. And they come up with these slogans. You can never beat City Hall. How about this? You never have to fight City Hall if you walk away from it. Totally walk away from it. City Hall will be empty because City Hall needs you more than you need City Hall. So at some point, we need to realize what's really going on in these schools. In these schools, it's the perfect, they're using security as a perfect way to lock you out of knowing what's really going on in the classroom. What's being taught. And our young people are so, you know, they're easily at this age, at the times at their school ages, they can be so easily manipulated with subtleties, not having an idea, because young people trust. One of the most important things that we need to teach our children, if you're going to keep them in school, is not to trust the teacher nor the darn school that they go to. The principal, none of them. Because you have to strengthen them if you're going to keep them in that environment. And I tell you, you need to have a plan in case something happens that your children know not to go with that school. Have a plan to retrieve your children before the school takes them. However, whatever it is, develop a system, because believe me, this one exercise, an event that they did in Denver, is national policy. All the schools do it. All the schools do it. And I know that there's an event that's going to happen in Pennsylvania. And there were different events that were happening throughout the country at different times. And they were basically where the buses came in. They had an evacuation plan where they were going to take their children from the school and to where they were going to take the children. God only knows. And at some point, at the appropriate time, you have to remember who these people are. This is why you need to know history, to know the extent of who these people are. At some time, I could even see them taking the children and using them as pawns against parents. And what do I mean by that? They will use the children to get to parents at the appropriate time, whoever those parents are. It's not above them to falsely arrest and imprison children. This is why you see these events happening. This is a programming. This is programming you to accept the authorities arresting children for very minute things and taking them and seizing them, because that's what they're doing. They're seizing the children from you because children have special rights. And those special rights aren't by what man writes in a book. The special rights come from what you write in your heart as to how far you will protect your children and what you will be willing to do to protect them from anyone and everything. Didn't even need to think, and it's a telling thing where we didn't really come up with a plan that we need to protect our children from the state. But if you really think about it, it's always been that case. It was the state that sanctioned and condoned slavery. It's the state that have taken children away from and put them into very, very
seems like we got disconnected. Give us just a second and we will get back connected. Sometimes these things happen. Y'all stay patient with me as I connect us back to the call.
Incorrect access code. Please re-enter your access code followed by the pound. Access code accepted. This conference is being recorded. Q&A session started.
Institution. Who funds it? What's the extent of the funding? You will be surprised. There are militant groups and mercenary groups that are behind this and actually fund it and actually enforce some of the child protection services. Because why? There is a global need in organ harvesting, sex slavery, scientific studies, so much that's going on within the realms of our children. And we have to protect them from these institutions. It doesn't matter if you happen to know a good person at an establishment, at a school. You know a good principal. That individual may happen to be good, but it's the system that's the problem. And what the system is doing, it can't be ignored. Now, if you want to ignore that, by all means, fine. But you're playing Russian roulette with your children's lives. This is why we need to change what we do. It's time for us to take back our existence so that our children can have a prosperous existence. Listen, everyone, just want to thank you all for listening today. And I'm going to post the one story about what happened in Texas. We're taking the YouTube video down and a couple of things. I'll post them up a little bit later. Check it out. This is very, very real. There have been many children that have been in custody of the so-called state and was abused, sexually assaulted, and totally psychologically destroyed. This is the agenda, and it's nothing new. So, hey, just want to thank you all for listening. Tomorrow, I won't be able to have a show. So, Scotty, if you can run another one, because I have some very important things that I need to do. But we will be back on Monday live. And I just want to say thank you all for listening today. And remember, before you ask for a blessing, to make sure to be a blessing. And it's never goodbye. It's just I'll see you later. Take care and much love and much respect.
Girl, you are rich, even with nothing. And you know tenderness comes from pain.